This is Melissa, and today is the 29th of June, 2025, and I hope that you are all doing very well. And I wanted to just right off the bat remind you to go to the website and take advantage of all of the literally couple thousand audios that are up there for free download, transcripts, stacks of them. That's cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And while you are there, as Alan would always remind us, make a note of the other sites that you can access, cuttingthroughthematrix.net, .us, Alan Watt, cuttingthroughthematrix.ca, and alanwattsentientsentinel.com. And there's also the mirror site, cuttingthrough.jankness.com, and then the video channels and the other things that I have started in the last several years. YouTube, BitChute, Odyssey, a couple of channels at Rumble. There's X, Substack. Just kind of doing the scattershot approach here to get as much out as I can. There will also be right on the main page, cuttingthroughthematrix.com. If you scroll down a little bit, you will see the link for how to donate via Stripe or have a subscription via Stripe. There's a link to the Cutting Through the Matrix book club on Telegram. And our next discussion, we're going to hear from Neil Foster, who's covering a couple of interviews, and that will be next Saturday, the 5th of July. So there's a lot on the website. There's audios that you can download. There's transcripts. There's information on how to purchase the flash drives. The flash drives are all of Alan's work except for the books. There's a link there on how to order his books. There's a link to article archives, and that's, you know, some of the articles that Alan thought were most important to archive for you, mostly documents such as the UK's Ministry of Defense projections. That was an interesting document that he talked about quite a bit. That's UK Department of Defense, DCDC Global Strategic Trends Program, 2007 to 2036. And it's interesting to see so many of the things that were talked about in that document playing out in front of us. And then there are other things like links to the Aldous Huxley speech at Berkeley. All of those things you'll find in the article archive. There's a link there for Not Sure articles. So all of this by way of saying, I thank you for your support. I encourage you to support so that I can keep going. And I have a renewed vigor. It has not been easy going for me the last little while, and I have recovered my footing or my stride or however we want to put this, and I have, as always, a burning desire to bring as much of this to you as I can. So thank you. Thank you so much, those of you who support. I didn't want to spend an awful lot of time thinking about the situation in the Middle East because this ceasefire, the 12-day war, Operation Rising Lion, and then America's involvement with Operation Midnight Hammer. Boy, these warmongers, they just love their catchy little names. But it's, you know, there is an agenda, and those of you who have listened for a long time to Alan understand that whatever this lull is, eventually they will get around to finishing the region off in a way that suits them. This article that I want to share from the Jerusalem Post is about enough on that. The Israel-Iran peace, Trump's motivation for holding ceasefire is a Nobel Prize legacy. So this is an opinion piece. We'll see. The writer said, it remains to be seen whether Trump started another war or ended one that day. attacking another sovereign power is defined as an act of war, notwithstanding the denials of Vice President J.D. Vance. He insists the United States didn't declare war against Iran, but only its nuclear program. I guess that means this is just a special military operation, not a war. And he guesses right. That's just the ridiculousness that comes along with the war industry. One email that I got from someone just prior to the ceasefire was questioning if, quite rightly, if those at the top in Iran and Israel weren't sort of in on this together. They had heard that both countries are dedicated to smart infrastructure and doing a lot of things to bring in that technology into the country. And the person who sent the email said, well, in that case, then they're all colluding at the top for the next phase in the agenda. And I would say to that, bingo. I've seen the same kind of articles come out around Ukraine and how much money Ukraine is putting into their smart infrastructure. I guess whatever money doesn't go into Zelensky's personal kitty goes into the smart infrastructure. So because I didn't really want to focus on the Middle East, and it has been on my mind all of the smart technologies, digital IDs, sustainability, and all of that, I started doing a search in my area, what's going on in smart cities. And so I'll just share a few highlights. I mean, what was interesting to me in looking at my area, I actually learned a few things that I had not heard about, which were quite interesting. And I also saw how these things are marketed to us. So the biggest large city in my area is Dallas, and it's about an hour drive from me, so it's not really, really close. But and it's not someplace I go that much, but I do have family up there, so I'm there, once or twice a year, maybe three times. And there was a big paper, and this is already from 2018. It's called Smart Dallas Roadmap, a guideline for a smarter Dallas. And it's a slick document, about 45 pages long. And it tells you what you can see when you look at the smart cities is how it's mixing in what we might call Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030 all into it. Yeah. And so I'll just give you the highlights of this document. What makes a smart city? That's the introduction. And then Smart Dallas, guideline for the future, current and future challenges, vision, domains, goals, infrastructure, environment, smart public safety, smart government, metrics, program models, ecosystem, and so forth. And there was there's a lot. I'll post this so that you can look at it yourself. But one of the ways that I saw some of the smaller towns and smaller cities in the area are approaching this, like the town next door to me, is through traffic. So the smart technology is being lauded as a way to keep traffic down and make it flow better. So that's one example. Then there's another town next door to me on the other side. And this doesn't use the word smart city. It doesn't use the word sustainability. And this is one thing that Alan pointed out. A technique is not to use those words, but to kind of skirt around it. And if you look up Agenda 21, you'll often find that that it's referred to as a conspiracy theory, even though it is a UN agenda. But it's now known, if you look on the UN website, it's known as SDG or Sustainable Development Goals. So it's barely referred to as Agenda 2030 anymore. The point is that when the public starts to catch on to what is going on, then they just find a different way of naming it, and that's how it goes. And the other day, a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to look this up and see if I can find it right now. I was on Pinterest, where I sometimes go to get pictures to illustrate a video. And I was illustrating a video, and there it is again. I'm going to take a screenshot this time and show you. And I was looking for just a graphic or an image to show you Agenda 21. So I typed in, and Pinterest is just pictures and, you know, things that you can use like that. So that's kind of, you can pin it and make a little scrapbook and keep it, whatever. But so Agenda 21, I typed in, and it came back with nothing but a caution. It said, pins about this topic often violate our community guidelines, so we're currently unable to show search results. And then there's a button there you can click to review community guidelines. Now, there's all manner of images. If you want to find out about witchcraft, Wicca, thruples and couples and new kinds of relationships, you can find it all on Pinterest. John Dee and you just pick a wild topic, you name it, you can find it on Pinterest, but you can't find Agenda 21. Interesting. So what I'm saying is, it is hard to find information, particularly on what is going on in your area. And then another article that I found in 2019 was that smart cities make for a larger attack footprint, and this is kind of a duh, and more potentially devastating results from a breach or a hack. So, I mean, this is really obvious. If you have all of your information in one area, it's definitely hackable, and we see this over and over. And there was something, because I was in Canada at the time, and I just was completely unaware of this. It did not cross my radar. But this headline is, how ransomware attacks on 23 Texas sites change the way cyber criminals operate. And it tells you, and in fact, one of the cities is my town, which is really only about 7,000 people, so it's not very large, but they were all held up one day for a ransomware attack asking $2.5 million. And the Texas towns did not comply. There is a little saying here in Texas, don't mess with Texas. And that is that was joked about as this story was covered. But what had happened is that the smaller towns that were attacked could not afford their own information technology, their own IT, dedicated IT teams. And so they didn't have that infrastructure, and they used a service, and that it was that service that was hacked, that was managing the data from these 23 cities. So these are vulnerabilities, but other articles that I read talk about how the solution, of course, is just to get smarter. So then I was thinking about all the different data centers, and this ties into this massive operation that we are seeing unfold around us, this Stargate project, where it's AI, AI, AI. And I started thinking about all of the money that's going into data centers and what goes on in all of these data centers that are popping up everywhere. And that I was doing some reading earlier today, the data center is basically considered obsolete after 7 years, and the money that goes into it, the electricity that is used for these. I'll post a couple of articles. I don't want to spend too much time here today, but this is one from datacenterdynamics.com, and this was from January of 2024. Global data center electricity use to double by 2026. AI and cryptocurrency workloads are driving up demand. Now, the one thing I know from doing research on this topic is that a lot of the cryptocurrency, crypto mining data centers are being repurposed for either AI or general purpose data centers. So that is a little misleading that the cryptocurrency workloads are driving up demand. Yes, that is there, but where it appears to be headed is to feed the AI infrastructure. And so we just ask ourselves a lot of questions. Why? What's going on? What are they doing this for? I'm going to post another one from October of last year from McKinsey. AI power, expanding data center capacity to meet growing demand. Soaring demand for AI-ready data centers offers many opportunities for companies and investors across the value chain. How quickly they grasp them could determine the pace at which AI is deployed. And it's one of those things, at least for me, some of you might have an easier time understanding all of this, but you really have to understand a lot, you know, the compute power and what does that mean. This is one again from Data Center Dynamics. AI could drive $6.7 trillion investment in data centers, maybe, claims McKinsey. So this is referring back to that other report that I will mention. It's just focusing on a certain aspect of that report. It says global capacity could triple to 219 GW. I realize immediately I don't know what a GW is. If AI proves useful, firm says, but only if the technology finds real-world utility. So, by the way, a GW is a gigawatt. And then I'm trying to find out, well, how much does it cost to generate a gigawatt? And no way that I could search it out would answer that question. But all of the search results were sure to tell me that whatever it costs, it would be cheaper if it was generated by solar power or wind power. You know, like, well, you can't tell me how much it's going to cost. I could determine for myself. I'm sure if it's done by wind power or solar power, it'll definitely be cheaper than coal or nuclear or whatever. So at the end of all of this diving into it, I went back to the talk from Alan, and I was just thinking about how we are nudged and our behavior is guided to where they want to take us. Now, and I'll just really quickly mention here that the BIT, the nudge unit, is based on nudge theory. Nudge theory is Cass Sunstein. I'll put some links up there. You can find out about him. He's considered a power couple with his wife, who is Samantha Power. She ran USAID. That's been in the news a lot. She was the 28th United States ambassador to the United Nations for 4 years. She was a big Obama appointee and also worked for Biden. So that's the power couple, and he is the man behind Nudge. That is nudging you to do what they want you to do. So when I realized how BIT is kind of all over now, I went to find out what's going on in the U.S. and I just looked at the New York office and some of the things on the main page they're talking about. So this is what they want to nudge you to do. Changing U.S. consumer habits to reduce plastic bag waste. And the next one is, let's electrify. And of course, that's electric cars. And the third one there is, use a behavioral lens to tackle trust in U.S. healthcare. And that one made me laugh. I'm thinking, well, they've already tackled trust in US healthcare. I don't think that exists anymore. But I clicked, I took the bait, I clicked, and I get the same headline. And then it says, trust is vital to every aspect of healthcare, from reducing disparities and advancing medical innovation to ensuring the best patient outcomes. As healthcare systems recover from the COVID-19 pandemic, restoring public trust is top of the mind. So I won't read their PR there. I'll link to it though, and you can investigate this for yourself. But after all of the different things that I read today and looked at and considered talking about, I tried to get that Alan Watt bird's eye view. And for me, it was there, it was asking the question, why are they crowding us into cities? What is hap you know, and we know it's because of the system that happens next. But also the question that I asked is why how are we guided? How are we nudged into thinking that all of this infrastructure that is going into what is ultimately going to imprison us in these urban areas, in the 15-minute city, with the digital ID, where every transaction is tracked and traced, where your whereabouts are known, where basically your thoughts are read, you know, how do they sell this as a sustainable, eco-friendly, good thing for the environment when all you have to do is look at how many gigawatts they're sucking up on and the trillions of dollars they're spending, and these data centers literally are just popping up everywhere. And none of this is reducing a carbon footprint, you see. So, but your carbon footprint has to be tiny or non-existent as this behemoth, this monster is constructed all around us, but you're not even supposed to breathe. So it's these questions that we have to ask. You know, you can get very myopic, I guess, when you look at this. And so to pull back and go, why? And that is very, my goodness, that's very interesting. And Alan did remind us over and over again how unnatural the city is. And that is another place, a good place to go back to and think. They want you in an environment that is completely, incredibly unnatural. And so, cities, the beehive, Plato, and I thought, let's just take a look. Let's look up the liner note, the cheat notes for students who are studying Plato's Republic, and have a look, see at what he is saying about cities. So I'll just share with you a couple of highlights. This is from Book Two, Part Two. So there's a question about what kind of cities are desirable and what kind of cities are not desirable and what makes a good, healthy human society. Socrates introduces the foundational principle of human society, the principle of specialization. Okay, so just think about that for a moment. This is what is being introduced as the foundation of human society. And Alan is saying the city is unnatural. So the foundation of this unnatural environment is specialization. And this came up in the book club discussion actually today. Very interesting. It wasn't recorded, but it was a very interesting conversation. The idea of specialization, not Plato's Republic, what I'm reading to you, but the idea of specialization. The principle, back to Plato, The principle of specialization states that each person must perform the role for which he is naturally best suited, and that he must not meddle in any other business. The carpenter must only build things. The farmer must only farm. Behind this principle is the notion that human beings have natural inclinations that should be fulfilled. Specialization demands not only the division of labor, but the most appropriate division. And so in this way, Socrates is convinced, everything can be done at the highest possible level. So they've isolated the foundational principle, and that is specialization. So then they're going to have a city. This is called the just city. It's the healthy city, where only the necessities of life are provided: food, clothing, health, and shelter. And it is populated by the craftsmen and the farmers and the doctors. They all do their own job, and they are called the producing class. So he called that a healthy city. Now Glaucon, remember these are dialogues, Glaucon looks less kindly on this city, calling it a city of pigs. He points out that such a city is impossible. People have unnecessary desires as well as these necessary ones. They yearn for rich food, luxurious surroundings, and art. The next stage, then, is to transform this city into the luxurious city, or the city with a fever. Once luxuries are in demand, positions like merchant, actor, poet, tutor, beautician are created. And all of this wealth will necessarily lead to wars. So a class of warriors is needed to keep the peace within the city and to protect it from outside forces. The producers cannot act as warriors because that would violate our principle of specialization. So already you see how unnatural this is. And Alan would also point out that, you know, the rats will turn on each other. They do too much of everything, breeding and killing each other. And it's just, you know, deviant, unnatural things start to develop. And I think that's because we weren't really presented with a dialectic here, but a progression from healthy city where it's not natural, right? Because people really aren't specialists. And natural, are in our natural state, we would be generalists. So because I'm not satisfied doing just one thing, are you? So Socrates spends the rest of the book and most of the next talking about the nature and education of these warriors whom he calls guardians. It is crucial that guardians develop the right balance between gentleness and toughness. They must not be thugs, nor can they be wimpy and ineffective. Members of this class must be carefully selected, people with the correct nature or innate psychology. In particular, guardians should be spirited or honor-loving, philosophical, knowledge-loving, physically strong, and fast. Nature is not sufficient to produce guardians. Nature must be protected and augmented with education. The education of guardians will involve physical training for the body and music and poetry for the soul. Education of guardians is the most important aspect of the city. It is the process of purification through which the unhealthy, luxurious city can be purged and purified. And because the education of the guardians is so important, Socrates walks us through it in painstaking detail. So one of the, I'm just going to skip down a little bit, the guardians in training have to be supervised, their souls have to be shaped, they have to be told stories about the gods, and the people who look up to the guardians must also see them in a certain way. Socrates comes up with two laws to govern the telling of such stories about the gods. First, the gods must always be represented as wholly good and as responsible only for what is good in the world, if the gods are presented otherwise as the warring, conniving, murderous characters that the traditional poetry depicts them to be, then children will inevitably grow up believing that such behavior is permissible, even admirable. The gods cannot be represented as sorcerers who change themselves into different forms or as liars. These children will grow up without a proper reverence for truth and honesty. So in concluding the summary here, the question is asked. We might also ask at this point whether it is only the education of the guardians that is so important. If education determines whether a soul is sick or healthy, do we not care about the souls of the other members of society? The answer probably is that we do care about educating all souls, but since we are currently focusing on the good of the city, we are only interested in what will affect the city as a whole. Because of the way our city is set up, with the producing class excluded from political life, their education is not as important to the good of the city as the education of the guardians. Although education is important for everyone, the education of the producers, which would focus on development of skills appropriate to specialized vocation, is not relevant to the good of the city as a whole. The guardian class, they're not really good, because later on, and I've mentioned this before, in the dialogues, this whole idea of justice comes up over and over. What is just? Is just a desirable thing? Why do people need to be just? And at the end of the dialogue, it's really, well, what matters is the appearance of justice. So much of the Republic can be read on different levels, because it's really a dialogue for training he calls them the warrior class. You might think of it as the managerial class, the technocratic elite class, because they are understanding that they must have these things that would make them slightly more well-rounded. You can just be a worker rat in the city and go do your thing, and then you can have a beer and watch whatever you want to watch. But they can have the poetry and the music and the things that will make them more well-rounded, to give them the appearance of being, let's face it, coming from special wombs, different than us. That's who the guardian class is. And so really, when we look at people like Cass Sunstein and his wife, we're looking at the guardian class. And they like to tell us what to do. So you all take care, or as we say in Texas, y'all take care, and I will talk to you later. Thank you.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 9th of September 2018. I'd like to mention too that you can buy the books and discs, remember, at cuttingthroughthematrix.com from the website, and you find how to do it on the websites. Remember to make a list of all the other sites that I do have there, in case any of them get pulled or go down, because odd things are, as you know, are happening today. Not so odd, actually. And there's nothing happening today that wasn't planned a long time ago. And we've got to be prepared for what's coming along, without panicking either, too, because this, as I say, there's no surprises in the system in which we live. They talked about the different technological changes and information warfare techniques that would be used in the 1990s. They mentioned this when they gave the public the internet. Remember, the whole goal was to get the people addicted to it, and then they'd start reining in the freedoms that you would have, knowing you'd stay on, most folk would stay on it regardless once they're addicted to all the other things they can do on it. And that's what they're doing today. There's nothing happening at all that's unusual, as far as I'm concerned. They planned it a long time ago, and they talked about it quite openly in the newspapers back then. So here we are, because we're living in a system today, a global society, remember, a planned global society, where barriers are coming down, and borders are supposed to come down as well, according to all the bigwigs who own us. And the rest of the publics in all the countries have to just go along with it all. Most don't mind, mind you. They think it's all quite natural because they don't think too deeply about anything at all. They're told what to think and what not to think. And it's a technique to teach you how not to think about certain things. And it's very, very effective. And I might touch on some of the professionals that deal with that tonight. So remember, too, you can buy the books and discs at CatechismMates.com, or you can donate to me, too, and that keeps me ticking along and helps me pay for all the different sites I have up there and all the other things I have to pay for. As computers crash and that kind of thing happens, too, we have to replace things. Since we're supplied with junk, and it's disposable junk, basically, and they've trained the public that that's quite normal as well. At one time, you didn't buy things if it didn't last very long, and they're made to be robust, but today they've trained you, the customers, to suit the products, like Bernays said they would, and it's been awfully effective as well. Now, tonight, I want to mention, too, before I get onto the topic, but remember, too, that there are people waiting for some books. I'm getting them printed up, and hopefully I'll pick them up this week as well, because I'm really tied up. I'm out in the country, I don't live in the city, and I have to make the journeys and so on and fit it all in together. And to get basic stuff out of the city. And I don't like going in very often at all. And the older you get, actually, the less and less you like going. In fact, I never like going in, to be honest with you. Nothing to do with age at all. I never liked cities. Any cities, really. They're nice to visit once, and that's about it. And they're pretty much the same across the planet, with the cramming of the public into them. And once you're into the city, you're into a trap. A financial trap, and if you get married, you're really stuck then, because then you've got to support a spouse, and you have to both work generally to get just to get the basic rents paid and so on, or mortgages if you can afford a mortgage, and then you get stuck in a rotten job, and a city is a trap. That's what a city is, and there's nothing natural about it. It's meant to be. Those in the city are meant to be used by the elite, who control and rule the city, and all cities are the same. Plato talked about it a long time ago. And it works awfully well for getting people rich at the top, and for the rest of you, well, you just go berserk, or you go neurotic, or depressed, or whatever it happens to be, or you take drugs, or you take booze, and that's all laid on for you as well. That's what cities are, as far as I'm concerned, really. So anyway, as I say, I'll get the books and get them out to the people who are waiting for them. Now, tonight I'm into part two of one of the systems of controlling you all. We're all controlled, and your thoughts are controlled. I've been telling people this for years, your thoughts are controlled, and there's many ways to do it. And this is the second part of Three Thought Buster Opinion Adjuster by the BIT group, worldwide group, actually. And they were set up to help government, supposedly, to get the public to conform to whatever government departments wanted the public to do and what to obey, and without even realizing that they were being nudged into it, being guided into it, and adopting the opinions that were professionally put out to them. They don't even know what's happening, most of them. And I've watched this a long time, an awful long time, before they came out with the BIT group. They've always used professionals to manage the public, as far back as long before Machiavelli, in fact. These are professional people who are advisors. At that time, they were called advisors. Today, you just call them professors, etc., of psychology, neuroscience, behaviorism, all the things that they keep showing you, all these little experiments with putting things into rats' brains and so on to make them turn and stop and turn around and all that kind of stuff. It was all to do with humans, of course. It's not because they've got any interest in helping rats to be happy. It's to control humans and to make the controllers happy. And that's what the BIT is all about. And in all ages, you've got the rats, the true rats, who have degrees today, and who are quite willing for big salaries to do in free thought And I mean do in the free thought of supposedly free peoples. Supposedly free peoples. We've never truly been free for an awful, awful long time. What is freedom? Ask people that and they give you different definitions. But in reality, we're all being nudged, etc. And remember Bernays, who had such an ego. It came out at the time too when those with the egos, the controlled things, loved to boast about themselves and how bright and clever they were and how they had conned so many people. Bernays actually despised the general population because he said it was too easy to get them en masse to adopt the policies that he was pushing through on selling them things for the, or getting the people to, getting the general population to buy the products of the advertisers, which was himself, of course, in the groups he ruled on behalf of the manufacturers. He said it was just too easy. He had contempt for them because it was behavior modification. And people who love to believe they're free and they can, they've got their own minds and they can make their own minds up about opinions and whatever it happens to be, he laughed at that because even back then he knew it was a joke. Really. And today is beyond a joke. It's a travesty, to be honest with you. How people truly, truly are conforming en masse by their prompting and their guidance by those that manage you behind the scene. He called it an invisible government. The true power was invisible, and it wasn't the ones that you elect at all. And it's never really been the ones you elected, to be honest with you, because they're just front men too. Most people today, if you get to know their names, they're front people. It doesn't matter if they're supposedly the inventor of something, which is the big con today, to make you really admire them, going all the way back to Einstein and so on. They're made to be stars as a front, basically. It's a big star-making machine, and it makes them stars. And you're all made to be in awe of these people. And it doesn't matter if it's a Zuckerberg or anybody else, they're front people. And they're all working together, basically, as one organization, like one company, on behalf of those who really have the power in the world to control the people's minds on behalf of the masters. And don't think ever, please, that someone who's just a multimillionaire becomes a multimillionaire, billionaire, whoever it happens to be, don't think ever that they're somehow superior in any way at all. Because they're given that speech by the ones who really rule the world. They're made to be, we're going to make you a multi-billionaire, and you'll be up front, and you'll do all the things we tell you to do. And you'll push all these different other topics, social topics, we tell you you're going to do once you're famous. And if you don't do it, believe you me, we'll get rid of you. And they mean get rid of you. Do you understand? It's impossible in today's society, impossible, for any rich person, really, really, really rich person, to be their own man or woman and get away with it if they buck the system. There's an old saying, you know, basically, the sniper is going to get through. And those who control the world are ruthless. They're ruthless. They've always been ruthless. And they laugh at social norms in their big clubs at the top. And they have contempt for ordinary people and for the limitations of our thinking. That's what they actually say, how we're limited in thought. And they're bold, you see, because at the top, you have to be audacious and bold. And that means you'll take chances and risks that no one else in the right mind generally will do. You go beyond that normal thinking. You break boundaries by being unconventional. And that's been the norm now for quite some time. Even with CEOs, when they made them into some sort of gods, walking on water or on the air or something above us all, because the CEOs are treated like gods now with their little statements they come out, little quips they came out with, and everybody goes in awe of them, you know. There's other gods. It's quite amazing to watch and live through all this. It really is. If you're aware of what's happening, it's truly astonishing to witness it all. The pettiness of humans. Because they always go the same way, don't they? when they start to really believe they're into godhood. Yet that's the age we're in. And we're taught, being taught over and over with all the magazines and all the different articles about these people as being superhuman. Oh, they're such geniuses. And utter rubbish. Utter rubbish like this. But the sad thing is, the people themselves often believe that they are geniuses and gods. And a little bit of knowledge over the general population, since I've studied the population more intensely than any rats in a laboratory have been studied. And they're so cocky because they're certain that given the right kind of prompts, the right situations, they can make you obey and go along without even knowing you're being prompted, pushed and prodded a lot, and coerced and even threatened along the way. But you are. You really are. On behalf of your supposedly free and elected governments who employ these people and fund them using our tax money. So if the real power is unelected, why do you bother voting? Really, why do you bother voting? Because it's all a farce. All a farce. If voting for new candidates and the right people worked, you would have seen it before now. You would have seen it. And if voting worked, it would have been banned. It's quite amazing to watch it all. It really is. And the saddest thing too is to see how what does work with it all. It's like the cyborg thing too. The cyborg program was to do with the integration of science and technology with humans, with the human body and mind. And you can lecture people about it. You can show them the evidence of all the studies that have been done and little test programs over many, many, many years. But the public are unaware when it actually happens. And even the behaviorists will tell you this. They'll tell you that they know exactly how you're going to behave depending on the type of information they funnel to you and the way they funnel it to you, how it's phrased and all the rest of it, and how you're going to react by it. And really, the way you put things together and string things together is awfully, awfully important. They also know that you'll ignore most of information, even if you put the same information out later by an authority figure. Somebody you know, it could be an actor or actress, simply because you think you know them, you think they're famous, or as someone in authority. And that's why they use so-called celebrities. A terrible term, actually. Because they're not a heady people at all. They're not intellectuals at all. They're little actors and actresses, but they use them as fronts for big major topics for changing society. No, global warming and the greening and blah, 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 blah. But they have no more education or intellect than actually maybe even less intellect than the person who fixes your plumbing. It's all in perception, isn't it? And if you're told someone is famous, you'll grovel more than someone who's not so famous. Sad thing, but it's true. But that's how power works. Power works very, very well on the public because it's done through behaviorist studies and repetition and the tests that they put on the public too. Every year, there are countless, countless, countless studies for statistics on questionnaires. The same questionnaires for the last 30 years on different topics that are socially sensitive. And they always know. And they're awfully good at predicting the actual year a study on a particular topic will come out where most of the people studied will be all for whatever it happens to be. Whereas 10 years ago, they'd have maybe 40% saying, no, I didn't like this or whatever. And all broken up into age groups because everything is brainwashed into the children in school and then through college, high school. And college and so on. And that's how it's done. Very, very precise, very effective, and it works very well on most topics. So they can change society quite easily by the way the behaviorists have designed the indoctrination curriculum in school and the toolkits that they give teachers how to bring the children to agree on topics which that perhaps they shouldn't be agreeing upon. It's very effective. The very thing that Aldous Huxley talked about on one of the TV shows he was on, when he said that there were techniques to be used on the public that would make them, it would change their opinions and behavior in ways that perhaps wasn't wise or good for them in their own interests. They wouldn't be aware that they were doing it and being prompted and guided and so on. Very effective techniques. And that's how it's done, very simple. But today, because the techniques of indoctrination were put in very early on, very good indoctrination techniques at an early age, just like Jack Salal said, the subsequent indoctrination would be much, much easier, and propaganda would take a better hold, actually. It's very, very effective. And the children today, no matter what they look at, even if they ever look at a paper book, for instance, for children, they've got all the PC messages in the stories, paid for again by your tax money, because they get paid to insert all the updates for the changing of society that they're going to experience in their own lifetime. And it's all through the electronic media too. And it's reinforced in school and right through their educational period and their movies and so on. There's nothing left to chance in this system today. It's pretty seamless, right from supposed fact to fiction. It's all seamless integration. It works very, very well. The sad part, too, is that it's worked very well. Those who become adults have it fixed in them as well. They never change. That's the sad part about it. You've had your mind stolen and you don't know. In fact, you'll fight anybody who says you don't have your own mind and your own opinions. It's a sad thing to see people who get angry. I know what I'm doing. I know what I think. I know the conclusions I've come to on my own. You can't help them or show them. They'll naturally, they think they have basically come to these conclusions and opinions by themselves. Or what to like or what to dislike, and right down to what to hate, because the behaviourists also teach you what to hate. But Aldous Huxley talked about on the Wallace Show. Now, the Behaviour Insights team that I talked about last week is worldwide, so-called professionals that are advising governments on every possible thing you can imagine. And supposedly, they'll tell you supposedly, it was to get the people to change their habits and so on to save governments money. And then to save money for themselves for retirement, things like that, and to give more money to charity, and even to donate their bodies for organs, donations, without you knowing you're being nudged by professionals who laugh at you because, let's be honest, if we're so easy managed, in fact, if you were managing the public and it was so easy, you start to have disgust at the public, just like Bernays. It's true, you know. And these are the elitists that rule you. It's exactly what they do. And getting back to the whole idea of cybernetics, you don't have to have the chip implants in you. You don't have to have your behavior changed. Cybernetics also can be really used or be in the form of using internet technology and digital technologies that's outside of you. You're simply interacting with it all day long, every day. Same thing. And your behaviour is being changed constantly by professionals. And now, of course, by computers and computer systems themselves, because they admit now they can do that. The computers themselves run programs and can design programs, etc., etc. And more and more, it's being applied, actually. Anyway, here's an article here. It says, BX is coming back to London for 2019. And this is really what they're calling this international team, the big international meetings of the behavioral scientists, is the BIT groups. And this is technically BX isn't coming home either. The inaugural 2014 conference was held in Sydney, where it returned last month for BX 2018, but it was London where BIT was established in 2010. The world's first government institution, remember, dedicated to the application of behavioral sciences to improve public policy. And remember, too, they're also using it in all the different departments within governments and civil service. Do you elect any of these people? Of course you don't. You realize the whole system of government, even the one that they thought was working or was there, you thought it wasn't actually there the way you thought it, it has all changed. Anyway, here it goes, and it says that to improve public policy, in just 8 years, BI has gone global with over 200 teams working in countries around the world. They all work together, eh? 200 teams working in countries around the world and BIT offices in Sydney, Manchester, New York, Wellington, Singapore, etc. We're delighted to invite global BI practitioners and colleagues to the UK next year for their big annual conferences. And it says they've gone from strength to strength. It really sells out and attracts leading academics, policy wonks and public sector managers to discuss new results and share practical lessons. There are many academic behavioral science conferences around the world and lots of events focused on public policy, but none that brings the two together. And that's a specific niche BX aim to fill. So it says the magic portion of the interaction between policymakers and academics. So there you go. It's the magic portion interaction. Policymakers and academics. So do you vote in academics? You know nothing about, most folk don't even know they're there. They don't know that the policies coming out of governments for quite a few years are coming out from the so-called professionals that you've never even heard of. And what they do really is to get rid of all the human things. See, it's the human problems are always in the way, according to those that want to rule the world. It's always been the same human problems, because they say, like Bertrand Russell said, that people don't behave in a logical fashion. It's because they're human, you see. If you want something to behave in a very logical, predictable fashion, make a robot. Well, this is the next best thing to it, is using the human material and altering them, their behavior, through behavior modification in such a way they don't even know it's happening to them. To get them as close as possible to making, in their own words, to making the correct decisions. You understand? That's what it's about. Because being human, you're not making the correct decisions. You're emotional. Most things you'll decide in any big way is an emotional decision generally. And that's a nuisance to those who want to rule the world. Awful, it's an awful nuisance that. So they're going at it big time. And were you asked about it? Of course not. But then you were never asked about anything that mattered from governments, have you? You've never been asked about anything that matters. Do you realize we're living in an age now today where you have lots of professional, all kinds of groups that want to protest things, all led by professional people? I'm talking about the leaders of them, trained to lead these groups and to have their protests and their chants and four legs good, two legs bad, that kind of stuff. And they do it with, and they get it out there. The followers just get it out their system, get it out. Oh yeah, four legs good, two legs bad, blah blah blah. And then you go home and they think they're doing something, but it's diffusing and getting rid of anger and resentment and just irritation, frustration, whatever it happens to be. That's all it is. And it's all scientifically managed. And they don't even know what's happening to them, the ones who are following you. It's quite amazing to live through this age when everything's managed with events like all year round, all planned out and published in major cities across the world. Protest groups all taking their turn at different things and yeah, whatever it happens to be. And nothing happened. The same systems run all the time. The same people who run the money systems, the same people who run the war systems across the planet and who plunder countries for all the resources, same. That continues as always while the rest of the people are shouting four legs good and two legs bad, or whatever it happens to be. That's quite amazing. But anyway, I'll put some of these, I'm going to put quite a few of these links up tonight, just for those who really want to understand. There's a few who want to understand what's happening in the world and what really is running their lives. And you understand this part. I mean, you'll understand an awful lot of it, in fact, everywhere you look. For instance, these same characters are helping doctors decide by nudging doctors not to prescribe antibiotics and so on. Now, what they publish and what they'll do, like all power groups, there'll be a two-tiered system. There's one for the public, and there's the deeper stuff that the public shouldn't learn about because they might be a little bit unhappy about it all, or angry even. Now, if you have people being told, don't prescribe so much antibiotics. Well, supposing someone needs it. Okay, what's the next? Well, let's get the age groups of the people who are getting the antibiotics. Well, is it really wise to get them to the older people? Because they won't have as long to live anyway as the younger people. And this is the kind of stuff where it all goes into, folks, and you're put into categories as soon as you walk through the doors and what you think are hospitals and places that are there to help you. And they might just give you the euthanasia pill as opposed to an antibiotic, according to your status in society. And they have these categories, by the way. I read them years ago from the British system, National Health Service, where they had the resuscitate, non-resuscitate little codes that they had on the beds. Now it's on computers, of course, with the patients. And it's to do with their standing in society, their age, etc., etc. It's all cost-effective. Whether they're going to use so much money on you, or maybe put on someone who wants a certain change in some way or another that's not really what you would call a life-changing situation as such, or saving situation. But that's where we are today. Politics goes into everything, and now you have professionals nudging the doctors on what to do or not to do. Now, behavioral science is involved in everything to do with humans, including what you should eat, what you shouldn't eat, and ways of prompting you to eat the right way. Like, make the right decisions on what you should be eating, etc. They never go into the facts at these universities, including the ones in Canada, that Canadians were guinea pigs for all the GM food in the first place, all the vegetables that were modified, and using the specific pesticides that were much, much more potent than old pesticides to do with the GM foods. And it was done in secret by the government of Canada and the particular companies at the time that were growing the genetically modified organisms and foods and so on. Secret. It bust out. I did the shows on it years ago. It bust out from Britain when Tony Blair was going to make the people in Britain eat the same kind of foods that were, they call them Franken foods, of course. And it came out during the protest that Canadians had been eating it for 10 years in secret. The secret deal, I should say, was made by the government of Canada and it actually said that secret deal and these particular companies. And they studied us to see how it would affect our health. The studies eventually came out and they showed you that the test animals that were fed these particular foods developed cancers, the stomach, etc., and intestines, etc., etc., etc. And sure enough, with about the same time they started to give Canadians prescription drugs without prescriptions to do with reducing acid in their stomach. It was a reaction to the stuff you were eating now. They didn't know what was causing the problem. They probably didn't know, but of course the ones who planned it at the top obviously knew what was behind it all, because your body will always try and flush out something, just like the eyes will flush out something or the nose will flush out something that irritates it. So does your stomach as well, and it produces excess acids and so on to get rid of it. So they gave you the proton pump inhibitors, as they call them, over the counter for the first time without saying anything to the public. It just happened to be there on the shelves, and that was the reason for that, folks, for those who didn't know that, by the way. Secrets. Imagine voting for governments who did that kind of thing in secret and studied the public. Huh? Democracies. People talk about democracies. It should be demonicry, maybe. But anyway, here's another one too, to do with the companies that are dealing with BIT and so on. Because remember, they're using the internet big time and they have access to it. I mentioned last week that the cybersecurity company in Britain was for basically the GCHQ is pretty well next door to the big Google building as well. They call it, the company that owns Google is actually Alphabet, they call it. It's like a massive holding company. Anything to do with internet and telecommunications and any digital, anything runs through them. And your driverless cars, all this kind of thing. It's like hundreds, and everything you can imagine is under this massive monopoly, including how to shape society to suit their vision of the future. So here you have a relationship between Google and DeepMind, it says. DeepMind, they call it. Might not be as rosy as they'd like you to believe, according to an in-depth report from The Information, which cites several sources across both companies. Google fought off Facebook to acquire DeepMind, London-based artificial intelligence lab working on solving artificial general intelligence, in 2014 for a reported $600 million, but not everyone at Google saw it as a smart move. Now, I'll put these articles up. These are from Forbes magazine at the time, well worth looking up. And you'll find more about the people. Look, remember, if you're good at remembering names, remember the people, the names you'll see and so on. And Google Brain, terms like that, Google Brain. Deep Mind, as I say, is the deal. And because it's all part of Alphabet. And it's all to do with you, folks. Everything's to do with you. Everything happens on the... All wealth comes from the public. Even the one... I mean, you're all forced to buy certain things. You're all forced to go on the internet in this day and age. You're forced to do it. Every day, if you don't go on it, you get little prompts and reminders and nudges from governments that it saves money, you know, if you do it electronically and blah, blah, and save resources and all this kind of stuff, you know. They're always on about revenue. It says the lack of revenue generated by DeepMind is reportedly one of the main issues for some Google staff. Others are annoyed by the fact that DeepMind has a special status within the Alphabet Group that allows it to work on projects that may not deliver results for decades. The whole future is really getting planned, you see. And if you can be driving or not driving, or certain areas you'll have driverless cars, the rest of you won't even have them because you won't be living on the land with Agenda 21, as you all know. Remember, the next meeting for the Agenda 21 is 2030 to see if they've implemented the last part up to the year 2030, but it's still all for the 21st century. They must change the whole planet in this particular century. This is the century of change, remember. Transition, they call it. So, as I say, you have to get into the terms, and these big, massive corporations that are really intelligence services too, obviously, that control societies across the planet. And Jigsaw, and Jigsaw's part of it too. How can technology make people in the world? It's not to do with making the world safer, isn't it? And safer from attacks on free speech as well. Attacks on free speech. It's interesting articles, actually, because it goes into... They don't never use the term censorship of speech. This goes into helping prohibit certain types of speech or just knocking them off the net before it gets to the receiver, you see. Things like that. Yeah. And modifying what you're saying. Stuff like that. And then safer from online harassment. Do you think it's all happening? It was just now. It was planned years ago, long before they gave it to you. They knew where it would go. Actually, I think they helped to egg it along, you might say. Safer from violent extremism and safer from injustice and corruption, isn't that? Don't you feel better already that these are the people in charge of what you can say, can't say, and all the rest of it? It's to make everything safer, for goodness sake. That's a nice, proactive, nice word, isn't it? Social word, safe, safer, isn't it? Perspectives is an API that uses machine learning to spot abuse and harassment online. Perspective scores comments based on the perceived impact a comment might have on a conversation. Okay? Remember, too, you're dealing with behaviorists. They've been using perspective, to alter your opinions and the way you speak and think about things and what you believe. So they can also use it, you see, to alter what they don't like and what you're saying. So it may have a conversation which publishers can use to give real-time feedback to commenters, help moderators sort comments more effectively, or allow readers to more easily find relevant information. We'll be releasing more machine learning models later this year, but our first model identifies whether a comment could be perceived as toxic to a discussion. Toxic. See? There you go. And it's got online harassment. The challenge is the press. Google cousin develops a technology to flag toxic online comments. That's in the press. Google cousin develops technology to flag toxic online comments. And then it's got 02 Project Shield, a filter experiment where they can filter stuff out as you're saying stuff. And I guess I'll do it in such a way too. You won't even get the bleep, that you'll just get the... they'll be seamless. They'll just, you know, connected together with no gap there. And then we've got Project Shield. We've met news organizations around the world who suffer crippling digital attacks when they publish something controversial or that questions powerful institutions. Do you understand? All the motive topics of today have been planned long ago to stir up emotions and controversy. And they've all worked out to who to demonize when you can complain about it. Think someone's screwing with your head a bit. So Project Shield uses Google's infrastructure to protect independent news sites, independent ones, from distributed denial of service attacks, DDoS, a type of digital attack that exploits thousands or even millions of computers to overwhelm a website servers and take it offline. And that's true, they can certainly do that. I mean, the people at the top, including the intelligence services, have been crashing sites for years since the beginning. If they don't like what they're saying, they simply get a two or three computers to constantly go into a site and download until it crashes, basically. Very easy to do. And then I've got the challenge attacks on free speech. In the press, Google wants to save news sites from cyber attacks for free. Well, here's a world, part of the world ruling system, going to do something for free. Do you want to believe that? Do you want to believe that? It's like government saying we're putting on blue helmets to go into countries as peacekeepers. Not as soldiers, but as peacekeepers. It all depends on the colour of your helmet, you see. The rifles are the same, the grenades are the same, and all the gear's the same, but you just put a blue helmet on instead, eh? And most of the time they don't even do that. They just call it a peacekeeper. Right out of George Orwell's, you know. Yeah, everything's opposite of what the claim is, isn't it? But for free. And we're going to countries, remember, to help people, right? We're going to help them. We've never gone into any country to help anybody. Never, never, ever. Mm-mm-mm. Nope. There's an awfully good documentary put out about when they went into the Bosnia and Yugoslavia and the wars and Albania and so on, and Serbia. And it's called The Weight of Chains. Well worth seeing, because the information in that, what really happened, is something else. And the characters' names that come out are awfully well known, by the way. And the World Bank and all the rest, and how they literally take all these countries down, these little countries down, get them all fighting each other. Literally, the US was, and some other countries were arming them like crazy to go to war with each other. Tell them they're all going to end up ruling the area. Each one was, or you're going to rule the whole area. And then they end up all broke, all in debt to the World Bank and the IMF, and big American companies come in and take all the resources. But we were in there to help people, they said. Anyway, so the attacks on free speech and so on, and they want to help you from keep free from cyber attacks for free. These are intelligence agencies that crack and take down sites. All they want to help you for free, right? All depend what you're pushing. If you're pushing part of their propaganda for them, they might leave you alone. This is how to use Google's password alert tool to thwart phishing attacks. And then I'll put in this one here too. Conversation Artificial Intelligence is a collaborative research effort exploring ML as a tool for better discussions online. Isn't that wonderful? For you that, remember I've told you, a lot of the arguments you're having online are done by computers. It has been that way for years. You have these sock puppets, they call them. And folk are committing suicide because these sock are arguing with them. They think they're real people. They really do. Why would you argue with anything you can't even see anyway in the first place? So how might machine learning methods help online conversations? What aspects of a conversation can machine learning understand? And what are the risks and challenges of using machine learning to assist online conversations? So there you go, public data sets and so on. The main challenge of machine learning research is limited availability of high-quality research data to improve online discussion. We want to change that by creating, publishing, and or identifying high-quality public data sets related to online discussion. There you go. And they give you Wikipedia talk page comments and so on, annotated with toxicity reasons, Kaggle competition, never heard of it. A public Kaggle competition based on a crowdsourced data set that includes four toxicity subtypes, reasons why something might be considered toxic, and so understand that these are big movements to alter everything, folks. And it's generally your tax money is being used to create your chains, in a sense. Always. We always pay for our own chains. Now we only have big band-aids over our mouths, probably. If you're bad, oh, you're bad, get some good duct tape and stick it over that mouth of yours. Big tape. The company formerly known as Google is far bigger than most people realize. No kidding, eh? Several of the projects and companies overseen by Alphabet Inc., the holding company Google created in 2015, had generated news of late. RBC Capital analyst Mark Mahaney issued a bullish report of the future of Waymo, a self-driving car company, due to launch commercial operations in Phoenix, Arizona before the end of the year, it says. And Wednesday, Alphabet's research and development arm X announced that two projects, Loon and Wing, will become independent companies within Alphabet's. This is a whole list of different companies within it. This Javelin 2, a secret project and so on, that Larry Page was on about. They're focusing on the big picture, you know, the bigger picture. Yeah. Sounds very suspicious. Eh? And Alphabet is a massive corporation that encompasses everything from internet beaming hot air balloons to self-driving cars to Google Cloud. It's everything basically digital that you're going to be forced into, whether you like it or not. And it gives you some of the history of it and its research and development. But believe you me, most of the research and development is coming from not just private corporations, but also from your tax money. Always is, eh? And it also goes into Google Fiber, launched in Kansas City 2012. As for smart cities and so on, how it's going to control all this kind of stuff. One massive monopoly, really. They'll pretend it's not, but it's a massive monopoly. It's just a big holding company with hundreds and hundreds of organizations and companies underneath it that run your life, basically. This one article goes on forever, pretty well. See, with the companies, some of the companies that it runs and owns, basically, under Alphabet. And it's also got one is an urban innovation, as I say, smart cities and so on, led by Dan Doctoroff. Who's got a name like Doctoroff? But anyway, Sidewalk Labs aims to find new ways to improve cities through technology. And goes on and on. Then as Calico launched 2013 with an ambitious goal, cure death. The Alphabet-owned company has invested millions to develop drugs that could help prolong human life by fighting age-related diseases like cancer or Alzheimer's. I personally think that that at the very top, they've had these medication, or they've definitely had advanced medicine and treatment for these things for a long, long time. Because some of the top people in the world, the most richest within the groups of them, for years and years and years, they don't come down with old age diseases like most folk. They don't get arthritis and so on. They're generally giving lectures to their 100 years old. Quite frequent lectures at that too. Another one too is GV Alphabet's early stage venture arm, formerly known as Google Ventures, has $2.4 billion under management, has invested in more than 300 companies, including Uber, Flatiron Health, and Slack. Then Google Capital is Alphabet's growth equity investment fund, and it says it's purely financial returns and so on. The think tank division with Alphabet was spun off in a company called Jigsaw, led by Jared Cohen. And Jigsaw uses technology to tackle geopolitical problems like online censorship, extremism, and harassment. In other words, they are censoring, you see. The ones who tackle it are censoring. So there you go. And then they've got artificial intelligence of all kinds, blah, blah. DeepMind, Waymo, Alphabet self-driving car, and so on and so on. This is too long to go into, but anyway, Project Loon, and so on. I'll put all these up tonight, by the way. And then you go into this one here, and it says, who are we? We are a global community of public-private sector decision makers. This is part of it, too. They're called decision makers. Behavioral science researchers, policy analysts, and practitioners with a bold mission to, see, there's that word again, bold, to promote the application of rigorous behavioral science research that serve the public interest. We serve as an information hub and community builder, connecting individuals and organizations through our conference spotlight workshops, task forces, and publication of newsletters in behavioral science and policy. So the philosophy is the impact of public-private sector policies depends critically on the behavior of individuals, groups, and organizations. We believe a clear understanding of the power of behavioral science research interventions can provide innovative solutions for addressing challenges faced by policymakers and other practitioners. So it's how to make the people do what you want them to do, basically. It's a global hub, BSPA, where behavioral scientists and policy and other practitioners interact via conferences, workshops, briefings, and our membership portal, and so on and so on. But these are the ones that help you make the right decisions and actually say that. And all the same old people, Nussbaum's there, Grant, Erner, Sunstein, all the names you've known, Craig Fox and so on and on and on, Kahneman, Daniel Oppenheimer, people who, and a lot of them have churned books out too if you really want to spend your life reading them. And how, if you can manage it, might. Mind you, there's only two kind of folk read their books. The ones who want to understand how they're altering society and they want to complain about it, and the ones who want to cash in on it and become one of them. And there's a lot of people out there who want to be part of the winning team and helping to manipulate everybody else to do their bidding. Also, Ontario's Behavioural Insights Unit 2, I'll put that there as well. They also work in the Treasury Board Secretariat, the Centre of Excellence for Evidence-Based Decision-Making, etc. Because remember, too, they're trying to make you give more tax money, give more money to ministries, the big foundations, that you know, the big foundations that they're there because they're there because they love you, you see. And how to eat right and do right and all the rest of it. The things you're not doing properly, to make you make the proper decisions that they've already decided they're proper. You understand what I'm saying here? They've already decided what the proper decisions are for you. So why bother trying to make them yourself, for goodness sake? You probably make the wrong ones. So anyway, they have the Behavioural Insights Group. They call it BIG here. BIG sounds better than team, but it's part of the team. The Behavioural Science and Policy Association, etc. So I'll put this one up as well. Improving communications using behavioural insights. New results from Test Plus Build, it says here. New for employers. The latest evidence on what works to reduce the gender pay gap. Encouraging retirement planning through behavioural insights. You're going to starve to death and inflation is running rampant. Have you saved money or are you not? Is there any point saving money since it's worth getting worthless all the time? I think eventually they'll do away with in Canada, they'll probably just get rid of the $50 bill since everybody has to pull out hundreds these days to pay for anything. It's worth nothing. That's inflation for you. Improving the annual electoral canvas. So here you are, too. BIT constantly on lookout for interventions that can scale dramatically at low or even no cost. That's why we're excited that some of our evidence-based interventions will hit millions of letter boxes across England, Scotland, Wales this summer. The household inquiry form plays a key role in keeping the blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they're trying to get everybody to start voting. So you understand voting is a legality. If you put yourself down and you're registered to vote, then you've made a deal with somebody, you've got to do it. And then you, when you do vote, then you've made a deal, they can do anything they want to you once they're in power. It's a legality. What do Evans and Olives have in common, etc.? People can learn in a number of ways, through direct instruction, and through watching what other people do and learning from their actions, or through our own experiences and trial and error. Psychologists have long studied the ways in which we learn from our experiences as well. And in other words, what they're going to tell you is they can guide you along a lot faster into the proper ways of behaving. But they've decided for you, you see. And then symbolic rewards, real benefits, and ways to give you little gains. Give all your information up for maybe a special card in a store for a little discount. You give all your information up. Isn't that wonderful? Symbolic rewards, real benefits, and so on. And then the 1-2, antimicrobial resistance and BI, what's next, you see? In their book, Superbugs, the Arms Race Against Bacteria. They're going about, oh, how terrible it will be if the drugs don't work, and blah, blah, blah. So should you really be prescribing it? Goodness sake. Opposite apologies, onwards to the next frontier. Remember, this is the last frontier. The final frontier is managing and brainwashing and controlling billions of people across the planet. That's the final frontier is your mind. I hope you understand that. So new frontiers in behavioral insights, behavioral exchange, etc., etc., blah, blah. Also, using behavioral science to put charities on a sure footing, how allegiances can harm policymaking, call it policy tribes, scaling effective health interventions across the globe. You know, if you're getting on, why don't you just take this pill here and have done with it, rather than cost the taxpayers more money when they can use it for better, you know, pay increases for some of the specialists in the hospital. The minefield of modern dating, why businesses need to give up their game on the small prints, keeping your eye on the ball, defense of self-control, how to tackle gender pay gap. They're all in the same things, you'll notice, because uniformity is very important to get things done. The illusion of similarity, helping people save on their energy. You know, freeze to death in the winter, put on more clothing because it's going to be too expensive to pay for your electricity shortly anyway. So they help you save and not do things. They help you, you see. Then the problem with groups, because they run all different kind of groups, say ones who protest everything, and they call for papers about social norms. And then how to prompt doctors to get doctors to reduce their antibiotic prescriptions or boosting classroom attendance. These norms are now blah, blah, blah. How to run the world really is what it is. A call for papers about social norms. I'll put that up too. Another one here is even how to alter behavior of different ethnic groups in the classrooms. And that'll change their lives. And how with certain minorities and with other big majorities. And they've studied it all, how to do it, just how many should do in a minority to a majority to make it start to work, to they're accepted and so on. It's just amazing, everything that they've done here, including the different kinds of minorities and what works quicker than others. Quite something. And applying Behavioral Insights Team North America, the Behavioral Insights in Canada, 2018 speakers, got all that too. Most folk won't read this stuff. They really won't. They don't mind being managed, in fact. They're also teaching you what you think and how you feel about climate change, you know, what you should think and believe about it. This is they are working in all countries, the BIT, they're working in all countries together to bring everybody to the same conclusions. Remember the Club of Rome? Man is therefore the enemy. They were given a reason to really control everybody and get everybody to give up their rights and be controlled. And they said that climate change and drought and famine would fit the bill. Therefore, man was the enemy. So it's going on and on. That's why carbon is so important. Even though there's more forests emitted carbon along with volcanoes in the last year than thousands of generations have ever done, that's got nothing to do with it because carbon doesn't matter. It's to control you and your way of life, and even right down to heating and eating. No kidding you. That's what it's about. Also, one by Daniel Goldstein, and they call it Choice Architecture by these BIT characters. It relates to retirement savings and organ donation. Currently, principal researchers at Microsoft Research, where he works the intersection of behavioral economics and computer science. Behavioral economics, folks, is a big one. He was previously a professor at London Business School and taught out research or researched at Wharton, Yahoo Research, Columbia University, and Germany's Max Planck Institute, where he was awarded the Otto Hahn Medal in 1997. Anyway, it says, just in the Behavioral Insights Team Academic Advisory Panel, was president of the Society for Judgment and Decision-Making. Nice and termy, Judgment and Decision-Making, the largest academic organization in behavioral economics. Everyone's economics, eh? Because the ones at the top can't get rich unless they get it off of you, all of you. And that's our dilemma, is how do they maintain a system into the future if they want to reduce the population at the same time, eh? Big, massive herd management. So anyway, I'll put this kind of stuff up. As I say, it won't be for everybody's cup of tea. Most folk don't mind it. I saw a lot of folk are scared about it when they get into that. Well, I don't really want to know if I'm being managed. I want to believe that everything is my own decision and my own opinions. That's what I'll tell you. Especially the ones who've gone through their lives, the young folk, up to the age of 18 now, that they've been brainwashed since birth with very effective techniques. Uniformly so, too, in a system where they're getting the same information daily and the same curriculum through schools and so on. And they watch the same movies, but it's all embedded in movies. But they think they're, you know, they think they're making their own decisions. But some of them are scared to go into that too. And some of them will tell you too, they don't mind what the governments and agencies know about them across the planet. They don't care. They think that privacy is ridiculous, that privacy would take time. And if they start worrying about things, it's much better having their bills automatically taking out their paychecks and everything without them having to even worry about it. It's kind of like not looking at it, and if it clears that week, everything's okay. But don't look at it. They'll give you a note if something didn't clear. And even that's been studied intensely too. And you're all going to go and vote, aren't you, the next time another group comes along, and you'll believe it's all real, the left wing and the right wing. Attached to the same bird. Okay. Sorry to hurry through, by the way. It's a lot of bits and bytes of information to run through there. And people will grab it. They'll use my information because I've done all the research, put it up for them. And they'll never mention me, but that's the way it goes, isn't it? Sad that, isn't it? Really sad in the system in which we live. Because if you don't have people who appreciate other people, we're all done for. We really are, and we deserve what we get, don't we? Really do. We've lost all the old values we had as a society. Really have. And people literally will rip each other off, just like the ones at the top do to the bottom. The ones at the bottom are doing to each other. Rather sad. Winners and losers as society goes down the tubes. And that's what they've been taught. Winners and losers. From myself, Alan Watt, from Ontario, Canada, it's good night, and may your God or your gods go with you.